Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Sarah Lane will be along shortly. Stephanie Humphrey is here, a.k.a. Tech Life Steph. How's it going,
hey,
Stephanie?
Now. It's going well. I'm happy to be here.
There's Sarah Lane. It's good to have you.
Sarah Lane, the Internet bids you well.
I don't think Sarah can hear us quite yet, but...
No, I can.
Oh, okay. Hi.
Thank you for bidding me well.
Yeah. We're just underway with the video and welcoming Steph to the program. Of course,
hi, Steph.
You all know
nice
her
to meet you.
As a technology contributor to ABC News and host of The Tech John with Terrence Gaines and Rob Dunwood. I just Woo-hoo. Noticed you have a Tech John t-shirt on.
And it's so funny. I've had this t-shirt since well before
oh, really?
The podcast.
Okay.
This uh-huh. t-shirt predates the podcast
Got
by
it.
Like
okay.
a year or two. But the serendipity of it all, I could not wear it, you know? Like, come on.
Now, you're from Philadelphia, so explain Tech John to people who don't understand.
So John is just a person, place, or thing. Like it's a noun, pretty much. It's a distinctly Philly piece of slang terminology. I don't know who to attribute its origin to, but I know Questlove from The Roots sort of popularized it back in the day when he would have these little underground parties in the city before The Roots kind of really, really blew up and started this whole sort of John movement where everything was a John. Like, so, you know, it was a Sandwich John or Wawa John, like everything can, anything can be a John. But the thing is, the pronunciation is what is really key in all of this, because you really have to kind of just let it slide out of your mouth. You can't overpronounce it. You can't try too hard to hit that W or to make that N pop. It's just John. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's not John, mm-hmm. like the name John. Mm-hmm. It's just John. You know what I mean? There's a nuance to it that comes with time and practice. And so, yeah, it's just, you got to work on it a little bit.
Yeah. If you're not from Philly, if you're from Philly, it probably just comes natural. I'm guessing.
I think so. It's so funny. In the Creed movies, Tessa Thompson plays, Michael B. Williams' girlfriend, uh-huh. and she's supposed to be from Philly, so she says John a lot, and she butchers it. And like, shout out to Tessa, I love her as an actor, but she butchers John like all throughout both
it's
of those
the giveaway.
Movies, and it's just
tell.
Hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, like she's not really from Philadelphia, so yeah. But the Tech John,
All right, yeah. I will not promise to get it right, but at least I have a better chance.
You're
now,
doing okay
you.
So far. You're doing okay. I have to say.
I'm trying. Rob passed along. He's like, yeah, it's not jawing.
No. It's like you don't want to hit the W. It's just Tech John.
All right. That's good. Cool. What else you got going on these days? You were up early today, I think, weren't you?
Who, me?
Yeah, I saw you, maybe it was a different day, but I saw you were doing some early hit on news or something on Twitter.
Oh, that was that got recorded and then it aired a little bit earlier. Yeah, we were talking all things Facebook, of course. That's, you know, the big story still. And I do a lot of work around digital citizenship, mm-hmm. In addition to the media stuff I do. So I get called to talk about social media and how it affects young people especially, mm-hmm. Quite a bit. So that's another not really a passion project. It's kind of my mission. So in parallel with all the media stuff, Till Death Do You Tweet is near and dear to my heart.
Excellent. How you doing, Sarah Lane?
Doing all right.
Grades.
It's my birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. My birthday is not a huge event, but it just happens to be my birthday. So I woke up to a dismembered mouse in my yard.
Oh, was that a cat?
I know. Probably.
Well,
yeah. It's my cat. My cat doesn't go outside and isn't doing things like this, but we do have a fair amount of neighbor cats that mm-hmm. like to hang out in our yard. So that was sort of a nice gift where I was like,
Okay. Thinking of you.
Get dinner plenty.
Yeah, like, do we do a burial? That sounds like a lot. Yeah, it's 8 a.m. It's cold. Okay. It was just a little mouse. It was actually, I felt really bad for it.
Yeah, just toss it in the trash.
I mean, that's what ended up happening, but I wished it well as I did that.
Mm-hmm. Said a few words.
That's right.
Bow your heads.
Like 8 to 10 years. I mean, they're not long lived animals.
Oh, I don't know if a little mouse lives 8 years.
7 years.
Actually, I don't know. That's a good question. I'm sure a mouse expert out there is like, no, it's 12 or 3 or something.
Divisible by 4.
Do they smoke? That makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, it depends on your lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's
it. Are they in NIM? Yeah. The average lifespan of a mouse is 2 years.
Oh, wow.
That makes sense.
But
I think the environmental factors probably.
But mutant and
does that include the mice?
This little mouse was, you know, it wasn't old age.
So right. So I'm wondering, is that 2 years like they're how long if they're living in captivity, or is that just in the wild when they get eaten?
The average lifespan is about 2 years, but mutant and calorie-restricted captive individuals have lived as long as 5 years. Wild-derived captive mouses have lived up to 4 years in captivity, but in the wild, most mice do not live beyond 12 to 18 months.
It's because they get eaten.
A lot of cats out there. Yeah.
I was watching this. You know how you watch one, like, you know, save the animals video, and then on Facebook, it's like all you're served, you know, for the rest of your life, right. You know, and everywhere on the internet. And there was something, and it was like this couple who had found a bee. The bee, I don't know, bumblebee, or I don't know what kind of bee it was, but a bee, but there was like, it was missing wings, or, you know, something so sad where it was the bee's, you know, about to die. And they took the bee inside and just decided to like make it their pet. And not sure how this works. The video is, you know, obviously designed to make you feel like, oh, this is so warm and fuzzy, but,
it's just weird and creepy.
Well, there was sort of like, they had kind of like a, almost the equivalent of like a bee aquarium, you know, where sort of the bee kind of had its little place, but then would come and like hang out on their shoulder and was like the family pet. But the bee, I think it was something like, you know, and then they get, you know, where the heartstring part of the story starts, and the bee was only going to live like 30 days. Mm. You know, like the bee lifespan is really short.
Right, right.
And, you know, once they knew that the bee was just going to die no matter how much it was loved. And then it did pass away. And it was just like this really sad story of, you know, the family pet bee. But it wasn't even a month.
I hate to say this.
Wait, the bee only lived a month?
That's just
odd. Well, but that was that's just kind of how it works. Bees just don't live very long.
I hate to point this out because it is a heartwarming story.
Is it though?
A bee is a hive insect. So having its wings ripped off, I know they didn't do it, and then keeping it away from all other bees, like,
right.
I'm just wondering, was the bee okay with this?
Right. Insult to injury.
I mean,
there.
Who knows?
No wings abandoned. And
it was unclear if the wings were an accident or if the bee was somehow born without wings. Don't know.
Right. We didn't get the history.
Yeah. Did not. I'm going to have to pull up this video now and share it with everybody, but not right this second, but, you know, if I remember after the show. But yeah, it was one of those things where it's like people want to take care of living creatures.
I just keep thinking that bee was like, I need to be where my hive is. Why are these people keeping me away?
The bee seemed happy, not gonna lie.
Hard to tell.
And of course, you know, good editing can tell a story, but it seemed like a happy bee.
Is it smiling?
I'm not buying it. Yeah.
It might have just been in shock and the dancing and the shivering might have
not
been.
Not doing it, yeah.
Oh, but the bee was kind of, you know, hopping around.
All I know is when summer comes around, there's a lot of dead bees in my garden. And I think, and Tom found this out, it's like apparently bees go to gardens when they die, like an elephant graveyard. They just Like if I'm, they grew up around flowers, then they'll die around flowers.
What does an elephant graveyard mean?
Well, that was, it's more of a folk tale that elephants keep a graveyard. So when they pass or whatever, they
all go to the place.
Yeah.
Oh.
At least wild African elephants have shown particular interest in the remains of other dead, like if they find a bone or something, they'll stay around it, you know, for a while.
Hmm. Elephants, man.
Couldn't we get
a pet elephant for the show? Just like a mascot.
We could look into it.
I know that's like potentially politically problematic, but like, wouldn't that be fun?
What if it's just a guy elephant? In like an elephant suit? Like, what's the one for the?
Maybe you could wear gray one day together.
Yeah, just a guy in an elephant suit. Same.
I like this. Like we could each wear a different gray for a different part of the elephant.
Just all wear gray one day, and you know.
I'll be the trunk.
Like, Sarah, what's wrong with your face? My tusks. Come on. My elephant.
Oh, name. You had a tusk canal?
I would really like a pet elephant.
Before or after the pet horse?
And pig.
I think the horse comes first. Elephant is a little bit more of a...
Well,
an alligator.
Commitment.
All you need to do is have an animal sanctuary.
I'm not sure we're getting an alligator.
We're just going to have the DTNS mascot zoo.
Wouldn't that just be so fun? Just like DTNS safari.
You need to like get together with Blair from This Week in Science.
I know. No kidding. I know. Like, I think I need to work at Blair's zoo.
Yeah.
just get it out of my system.
Yeah, Blair's like, hey, let's see you be around elephants for a couple weeks.
Right. Also, the idea of like pet elephant is like, do you have 100 acres? Otherwise, hard to do.
Well, I think after that first time cleaning up after it, the idea of it gets a little old.
Well, that's why you do what Bob Barker does and have an animal sanctuary. And therefore, it does what it does. But you can hire people.
But somebody's still got to tend to this.
Yeah, and that's why you get the donations in to help your animal sanctuary, to pay for the staff that look after the droppings.
We had a circus show up in the park behind my backyard when I was growing up. And we were cleaning up after those elephants for the entire rest of the summer, felt like.
Oh.
Because that was our baseball field. That's where our baseball field
is.
Oh, man.
And the circus people are like, here, better here than somewhere else.
Your pitcher's mound's a little bit taller than it used to be. You might want to work.
And that's how Tom never went to a circus again.
That's why I don't like circuses. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, a little PTSD.
Couple of missteps in the outfield cured me of that.
Oh boy. Well, welcome, Flyball. Stephanie. Welcome to
the thing.
Everyday on GDI.
You could have potentially recycled the elephant droppings into amazing fertilizer.
At seven?
Isn't elephant dung? Am I making that up? I feel like that's supposed to be one of the best fertilizers around.
My parents complained to the city about the smell while the circus was there, and then cleanup didn't happen the way it was supposed to, and it was a literal mess. They didn't do that again.
Best laid.
You know what isn't a mess?
Daily Tech News Show. Usually, thankfully, with Stephanie here, it won't be.
Yeah, with any luck. Also not a mess.
All right. Is everybody ready?
Yes.
Yep.
I will count
we
us
are
in.
Ready.
Here we go. In 3, 2. Coming up on DTNS, a Swiss student adds USB-C to an iPhone, a detailed look at Tesla's racial harassment lawsuit, and an amazing natural language processing advance from Microsoft and NVIDIA. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, October 12th, 2021. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Roger Chang, the show's producer.
And joining us, technology contributor to ABC News, author and host of the Tech John podcast, Stephanie Humphrey, a.k.a. Tech Life Steph.
So happy to be here. So excited for this conversation.
Oh, I'm so glad to finally get to talk to you and have you on the show and everything. I've really been enjoying the Tech John. It's been so fun listening.
Thank you. And thank you for all of your support. I mean, it's been really, you know, integral to the success of the show so far. And we've been having a lot of fun with it. So let's just keep this thing going.
Yeah, yeah. Keep it going. And Stephanie is also still here, even though on Good Day Internet, we were talking about elephant messes. if you'd like to hear that conversation, become a member at our Patreon, patreon.com/DTNS.
That is where you can join our top patrons like Mike McLaughlin, Miss Music Teacher, and JMC Smith.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Microsoft said that its Azure cloud service mitigated a 2.4 terabytes per second distributed denial of service attack at the end of August, the largest DDoS attack recorded to date. Senior Program Manager for Azure Networking, Amir Dahan, said that the attack was from a botnet of approximately 70,000 bots, primarily across the Asia-Pacific region, and identified the target only as an Azure customer in Europe. Another Microsoft tidbit, the Windows subsystem for Linux is now available as an app you can download from the Microsoft Store in Windows 11.
1Password launched a new feature for securely sharing login credentials called Password Secure Sharing Tool, PSST, aka PST. It is reportedly one of the company's most requested features. PST allows for sharing a generated link that other people can access even without an account. Generated links can be set to expire within an hour or last up to 30 days.
Apple sent out invites to a special event to stream live October 18th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. The tech press anticipates that Apple may announce new M1 MacBooks, a new Mac Mini, even new AirPods. The invited video called the event Unleashed.
Unleashed. Magic Leap announced it's readying the release of the Magic Leap 2 AR headset next year for select customers using it in an early access program with general availability to follow. That's right, I said Magic Leap. Magic Leap initially was developing a consumer-friendly AR headset, but it has changed the headset's name from Magic Leap 1 to the Magic Leap 1 Creator Edition, and then abandoned the consumer business in 2020, brought in a new CEO, and now it's very enterprise-focused and apparently getting enterprise customers. So there you go.
In the Apple versus Epic lawsuit that will never end, Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers largely ruled in Apple's favor. The only exception was a permanent injunction that stated Apple could no longer prohibit developers from pointing users to outside payment systems, with Apple having until early December to revise its App Store rules. Apple now plans to appeal that decision, not surprising, asking the judge for stay on the injunction through the appeals process. Epic previously announced it was appealing the decision as well, and Google has countersued Epic Games in its dispute, saying that Epic willfully breached its Play Store developer agreement when it added in-app purchases to Fortnite.
Yeah, so not a surprise. We expected the appeals, and now they're here. All right, let's talk a little more about new products from Tile, Sarah.
Let's do this. Tile announced a new line of tracking devices, including new versions of its Bluetooth trackers, the Mate, the Pro, the Slim, and the Sticker, available now. The new models have louder rings, 3 years of battery life, and increased range of up to 250 feet. But Tile also announced the Tile Ultra, coming in early 2022, which uses ultra-wideband, or UWB, in addition to Bluetooth. Apple's AirTag and Samsung's SmartTag Plus products both use UWB as well. But Tile Ultra will work on both Android and iOS. UWB can offer more precise location than Bluetooth, and in fact, Tile will let you use augmented reality to find Tile Ultras. Tile also announced some new services for its trackers. Lost and Found lets you scan a QR code on the back of new Tile models, except the sticker, of course, because it's a sticker. Scanning pulls up whatever contact information that the Tile owner provides so you can get the device back to them. And there's also an abuse prevention feature called Scan and Secure that's coming in early 2022 that will let any Android and iOS user use the Tile app to scan if any unknown Tile devices are in their vicinity. You don't need a Tile account for this, and using the app won't make you part of the Tile Find network, unless, of course, you want to be part of it.
Yeah, this is interesting on the tech side of UWB getting more adoption. UWB, like you said, is a more precise finder. That's why Apple uses it. That's why Samsung uses it. And the more companies that use it, the wider that adoption and the better those networks will work for everybody. We've got to know a little more about that. But that scan and secure feature is Tile leveling up, not catching up. They're catching up with UWB, but I think that scan and secure is really interesting to say, hey, we won't track you. You don't have to give us any information. You can just find out if there are any Tile trackers around you just in case. Stephanie, what do you think of that?
That is, it's interesting though, you know, you made that distinction between catching up and leveling up. And I'd be curious if Tile had leveled up before AirTags were released, would they still be in the Apple stores? You know, like, would Apple have even needed, I mean, not that AirTags haven't been in development for years and maybe this was inevitable, sure, but sure. You know, if this was something that could have been done, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, would this have made a difference in their positioning inside the Apple store? So I guess we'll never know. But I think this definitely changes the game because it can be used across platforms. So it'll be interesting to see if they bounce back from that hit they took when AirTags were released because they are cross-platform. But definitely that security feature, I think, is going to be probably the game changer, because if you are looking at Tile versus AirTags and you need something to sort of differentiate which one you choose to buy, that would probably be it.
You know, it wasn't that long ago where on my set of keys, I had a little Tile tracker, and it came in handy a few times. And I eventually was like, I don't know, I'm not using it all that much. And so I took it off my keychain, but it's that early adopter issue. You know, I kind of liken it to fitness trackers. You know, you had the fitness trackers of the early years, and now everybody's got a fitness tracker. And so when you're that first company saying, well, hold on, we champion this movement. Now we just have to keep up.
Been here.
Yeah, like AirTags are great, but we're cross-platform and we were here first and we've got all this new stuff. So, you know, good on you, Tile.
Yeah, yeah. Keep it up. And that cross-platform, I think you're right, Steph. I think that is one of the keys to keeping Tile in the game. Apple has added USB-C to its iPads, but not its iPhones. The idea of USB-C in an iPhone has come to the fore once again recently as Europe considers making USB-C ports mandatory on phones and other devices. One defense of Apple not using USB-C is that the ports may not be as workable as Lightning in Apple's phone designs. So, Swiss Federal Institute of Technology robotics engineering student Ken Pillanel decided to put that idea to the test. Back in May, Pillanel posted that he had succeeded at getting an iPhone battery to charge from a USB-C port that he had created, but the connection was too large to fit inside an iPhone. So it was a proof of concept that it could be done, but again, not fitting within the design. However, he found there's a chip in the Lightning end of third-party cables, not in the Lightning end of the Apple first-party, but in the third-party cables made by Apple, called the C94 chip. Pillanel reverse engineered that C94 part and created his own flexible printed circuit board version of it that he can fit inside an iPhone. He connected that reverse engineered flexible PCB to USB-C port on one end and the phone's Lightning apparatus on the other. Essentially, he squeezed the adapter cable down into a small bendy circuit board and stuffed it inside an iPhone 10 somehow. An iPhone 10, too, not a Max, a 10, leaving room for the USB-C port to replace the Lightning port. And in the pictures, it looks just like an iPhone, except has a USB-C port. He now has an iPhone 10 with a working USB-C port that transfers data and charges the battery just like the Lightning port does, because it's essentially just going through to the Lightning apparatus. Pillanel plans to post a video showing details of how he reverse engineered that C94 chip into a flexible PCB and how he was able to fit it inside the iPhone 10. I think that's the part I'm most interested in. Obviously, this is just a very interesting hardware hack from a really clever student, But it also, to me, it was like, well, Apple, he showed you could do it, and he didn't remove the battery. He didn't remove anything. He's able to fit it in there.
Yeah, it's definitely like shots fired, basically, for Apple, because, you know, I don't think they have any choice but to respond. I mean, I don't know that that necessarily means we see, you know, an iPhone 14 with a USB-C port, but they have to say something, I think. So it'll be curious what that response is. I'm actually interested in what the word just slipped out of my head. The people that make fraudulent iPhones, like what is the word I'm looking for, guys?
The fraudsters, like, is all I could think of.
Well, like the there's the a specific copycats. It's yeah. Yeah, the
knockoffs.
There's the knockoffs.
Yeah, that wasn't the word, but I'll think of it and then I'll spit it out like 10 minutes from now, yeah, randomly. The knockoff iPhones, you know, are we going to start seeing this? Because he was very detailed in his first video on how this could be done. So he kind of walked you through step by step. I have to think that somebody else is going to try this sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
There's this ongoing question, of course, especially since the newest iPad minis, you know, USB-C port. And everyone went, ooh, okay, what's going to come next in this Apple announcement about iPhones? No USB-C port, Lightning port still. And I'm sure whether or not it's great for the consumer, Apple has its reasons for this being the case. Is it because there are just so many Lightning cables that Apple had collected several years ago that they're just going to stay with it for a few more iPhone cycles? You know, is it the fact that having a proprietary, charging apparatus is advantageous to Apple somehow? I mean, I doubt that that really makes all that much sense to the company at this point. It's a mystery to me.
Yeah, I actually don't buy that Apple just wants to sell you more Lightning accessories, or they would have kept it in the iPad. Right. So there's more to it than just that. And I used to think like, oh, it's probably in a phone, it's smaller, it's harder to fit in and keep that battery as big. This shows that it's not just that. Maybe there's something else still there. I'd be curious what it is, what the reason is, but it obviously can fit if you're a clever Swiss robotics engineering student. Anyway.
Exactly.
Can be done. Well, Twitter launched that feature that lets you remove a follower without blocking them, aka the soft block. We talked about this back on the show. This is a feature that is now rolled out to you if you so desire to use it. So to use the feature, you need to go to your own profile, then click followers, look at your followers, find the follower that you want to remove, then click the three-dot menu to bring up the option, remove this follower. The follower won't be notified that you did this, but will stop seeing your posts in their feed. Maybe they'll just never think about you again. Maybe they will, but this is what it does. Unlike an actual block, they can find your posts on Twitter if they go looking for them while logged in. They can DM you, and they can follow you again if they see, oh, wait a second, I thought I was following this person. Let me follow them again. Previously, you could have the same effect by blocking somebody and then unblocking them. That is what a lot of folks on Twitter have done for years, and that's what a lot of folks brought up when Twitter announced this feature, like, well, we can still do this, but it wasn't something that was officially a Twitter feature. Now it is. This obviously isn't good for all situations, but do we think that there are situations it is good for?
So we were having the conversation about this earlier, the idea that this wouldn't deter a serious stalker, but maybe a casual stalker would lose interest. It seems though, now that the more I'm thinking about it as you were reading, it seems though all they would have to do is give users the ability to mute themselves to other people.
That's what I said.
That is exactly what the feature should be. Without going through this whole, I mean, it was a whole lot that you just read there. Yes. Like, oh, you follow, but you don't unfollow, but you don't block, but you listen, just let me mute myself to that user.
The self mute.
The problem. Yeah. This
and then the user just thinks you just haven't been around lately.
Exactly. Exactly. Twitter, Jack, are you listening? Just let people self-mute themselves. That's it.
Yeah. This does seem overly engineered as a solution, because what I immediately thought was, well, if you mute yourself to the other person, then they can't find your posts when they're logged in. But that just leads me to the question of like, but why would you want them to? With this new soft block feature lets them find your posts if they're logged in on Twitter by just going directly to your profile. They just won't show up in their news feed. So is there a reason you would want that?
I get why, you know, and of course this is, you know, sort of known as the soft block. I get why there would be a situation where you think, if I block this person, it's going to become a thing.
Right.
I really want to avoid that conversation or any confrontation that might, you know, result.
If they can't get to your profile, then they'll know. And okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I get why this could be helpful, but I feel like if someone is trying to cause trouble, and you know, anybody who's on the internet long enough, we all know who that, you know, those people are. They're going to see this and know what you did because they understand how Twitter works, and it'll anger them. You know, I'm not saying, oh, this is a horrible feature and Twitter is worse off because of it, but it seems like a very passive aggressive feature.
Yeah, I think they felt like they needed to do something. This may not necessarily have been that something, but it's something, I guess. And it is, I think, it sounds like it is more meant to not stir up an aggressive stalker. You know, like you said, Sarah, you don't want to piss anybody off. I've had that happen where people were aware that I, you know, blocked them or unfollowed them or whatever. And then why did you do that? So it's that thing, but I don't know that it's going to be as effective as they think it's going to
be. Yeah. It's ghosting people on Twitter. You just sort of,
it's like a light kick from the chat room. Yeah. You know, just a little kick.
The only thing I will say is, in Twitter's defense, is they tested this first. It isn't like they're rolling this out of nowhere. They must have found something in their test that showed it was used or proved useful.
Yes. Self-mute would help much better, though.
Well, listen to Steph, please. All right. Hey, folks, if you like our conversations here and want more of these kinds of conversations, do I have a show for you? The Tech John Podcast, featuring Rob Dunwood, Terrence Gaines, and Stephanie Humphrey, takes a second look at the week's tech headlines delivered from an African-American perspective. You can follow it over at thetechjohn.com. That's TECHJAWN.com. Go do it now. Monday, October 4th, an 8-person federal jury awarded $136.9 million in damages to Owen Diaz. Owen Diaz worked as an elevator operator at Tesla's Fremont, California factory from 2015 to 2016. In the case, Diaz described racial slurs, swastikas scratched into bathrooms, derogatory cartoons, and his suit claimed that Tesla subjected him to a hostile work environment, failed to prevent him from being racially harassed, and was negligent in supervision and retention of an employee that caused harm. The jury found in favor of all three claims. Now, Tesla argued that because a staffing agency employed Mr. Diaz, Tesla wasn't at fault. They were trying to say, hey, it wasn't us. You should go after the staffing agency. In a blog post after the case, Tesla's vice president of people, Valerie Capers Workman, said the company ensured its staffing agencies took action against the complaints, but wrote, quote, "We do recognize that in 2015 and 2016, we were not perfect." Reuters noted Friday that in a 2002 case, State Farm versus Campbell, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that punitive damages should not generally exceed 10 times compensatory damages. And you heard me say 136.9 million earlier. The punitive damages are 130 million. 6.9 is what's called compensatory damages. So it was 19 times in this case. Therefore, Tesla has grounds to appeal. They can say, look, that Supreme Court case says it shouldn't be that much. And Tesla is likely to appeal. However, Reuters does notes that the guidelines don't need to apply if the misconduct has a widespread impact and is found to be highly offensive or reprehensible, something that Diaz's attorneys made the case for in this case. So Tesla might appeal, but they might not win. It's not the only case like this either. Melvin Barry won a $1 million judgment in arbitration. That one didn't go to court. It was arbitration. That happened in May for being called racial slurs by his supervisor, along with other misconduct, and a class action suit against Tesla for race-based harassment is pending in California. Stephanie, you guys talked about this on the Tech John this week, but kind of give us the top line view of what y'all are talking about.
So it just appears that Tesla's record on this kind of thing is pretty abysmal across the board. I said on the podcast that I've not heard one positive story coming out of a Tesla facility around race relations ever, you know, since Tesla facilities existed. And it's just it's disheartening that they don't seem to care about the optics necessarily, even just the optics, because their response to it has always been, you know, very, very dismissive, very, you know, placing the blame. You know, he's not an employee. What difference does that make? He's in your facility. You know, he is, for all intents and purposes, working for you. You know, this is the opportunity to step up and deal with this and create an environment where all of your employees feel welcomed. And you're just whiffing it like every single time. And it doesn't even seem like you care. So it's problematic from that standpoint. And then two, you know, one of the things we talked about as well was the idea that we get a lot of comments on our show about, you know, why make everything about race? This is why, you know, and you know, when you see a story like this and when you hear of someone, you know, finally getting to the point where they brought this lawsuit, that's been a long time coming for that individual. You know, this guy needed his job. He sucked up a lot, you know, and the idea that this is some frivolous thing. And, you know, there was a whole, even on Tesla's blog, they had a whole lot of rebuttal statements to, you know, what Mr. Diaz was claiming. And it's just like, you gotta look at it from a more humanistic standpoint, because people are going to work every single day being subjected to this type of thing. And it gets to that breaking point. I actually listened to Mr. Diaz and his attorney were on NPR last week in an interview. And I happened to be in the car listening, and I caught his interview, and he talked about the breaking point for him to file this lawsuit was that, you know, his son, because they tried to use the fact that, well, he got his son a job here too, so clearly he wasn't that, you know, oppressed. But the breaking point for him was when his son heard a supervisor calling him a racial slur, you know. And it's just like, why would we have to get to that point where you are, you know, being demoralized in front of your child, you know, to get to this point? And so it really, I think the messaging I would love to leave with people is that, you know, believe people when they say that these types of things are happening. You know, I don't know what the solution is, because human nature kind of is what it is. You can't legislate people's hearts and minds, but I think settlements like this create consequences for people. I think that's the only thing that some people are ever going to respond to, is the fact that there is an actual consequence in place for this behavior, so that they understand that that behavior is not appropriate for this particular workplace.
Yeah, I can actually see the Tesla legal justification of like, hey, if the staffing agency is the problem, they should pay the fine, not us. I get that. But Tesla should also be saying, you know, we tried to take action. We tried to push the staffing agency. This was wrong.
Right.
We won't let it happen again. I'm not saying any of that stuff. I think that is bothersome as well, right?
Yeah, they didn't do any of that. And thankfully, I guess, you know, their own argument kind of got used against them in this particular case, because they're kind of harping on the idea that this is a contractor. But because he was a contractor, he was able to sue them.
Right.
The person that got the $1 million had to be forced into arbitration. There are a few other people that are claiming they weren't aware that they were even, you know, that was a part of their contract as a Tesla employee. So, you know, who knows how many other of these cases aren't even seeing the light of day because of that forced arbitration clause in the employee contract, and because people are just, you know, scared and they want to shut up and keep their jobs.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft and NVIDIA have created the Megatron Turing Natural Language Generation Model, or MTNLP, which they call the most powerful monolithic transformer language model trained to date. The companies say it's unmatched in its reading comprehension, its common sense reasoning, and natural language inferences. The system should make it faster and also less expensive to train language models going forward. The MT-NLP runs on 280 A100 GPUs, has 105 layers, and 530 billion parameters. Generally, the larger the number of parameters, the more sophisticated and nuanced a model can be. But as we all know, a model is only as good as its training data. So what was it trained on? Well, the MT-NLP was trained on 270 billion tokens of English language data drawn largely from an open source collection of data sets known as the PILE. The PILE gets its data from academic sources like PubMed and Arvix, as well as communities like Stack Exchange, Wikipedia, also GitHub. Microsoft and NVIDIA also supplemented this with a crawl of a large collection of news stories and social media posts. You need that last kind of real-world data to make the models work more like a human would work. But unfortunately, that also means that sometimes they work too much like humans. Microsoft and NVIDIA said, quote, "Our observations with MT-NLG are that the model picks up stereotypes and biases from the data on which it is trained. Microsoft and NVIDIA are committed to working on addressing this problem." They also say they encourage, quote, "continued research to help in quantifying the bias of the model and that any use of Megatron Turing in production must ensure that proper measures are put in place to mitigate and minimize potential harm to users and also follow Microsoft's responsible AI principles."
Yeah, this is a great example of what is good and bad about AI, right? They're pulling from great sources, Archive, PubMed, Stack Exchange, they also need to pull from social media posts because you want it to work like a human. So you need to get that natural language that humans do that you don't write in a medical publication or something like that. But when you do that, you pull in the patterns of a human, which means you're introducing bias into the algorithm because humans are biased, which I don't think means we shouldn't be studying this. I think Microsoft is exactly right to, on Front Street, say like, look, this definitely has bias in it. We want your help in figuring out how to deal with that. And also what they didn't say, but what I would add is, and that means you should make sure you don't use this in situations where you don't want that bias to have an effect, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, it's you know, you can't solve for human behavior, basically. But I'd be curious to know what it takes to create a data set and if that was something that was a possibility. Like, could we create a humanistic data set of our own to train the system on? You mm-hmm. know, it seems like the volume of data is probably too great to maybe consider that, but it's a curious question.
Yeah, you need bulk when you want to have a good training data set. And Microsoft even said that they curated this. They did go in and try to get rid of some stuff, but like you say, it's just so big that even human curation still is done by humans, right? So they're going to miss stuff. Yeah.
Well, if you have feedback on anything that we talk about on the show, anything that you want us to talk about on a future show or have talked about on a past show, do send the feedback our way. feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Thank you in advance. We'd also like to thank a few brand new bosses, and they are Arthur, Kevin Brock, David Grizzly Smith, and John Cepola. All just started backing us on Patreon. So thank you, Arthur. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, David. And thank you, John.
Hey, I like that. Brand new bosses. Good to have four of you in. I know we had a little long weekend here. Give you time. But the slate's clear now, folks. If you want to be the brand new boss tomorrow, now's your chance. Patreon.com/DTNS.
Indeed. Also, thanks. Big thanks to Stephanie Humphrey for being with us today of the Tech John podcast. Stephanie, let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
You can find me all around the web at Tech Life Steph, and you can check out the work I'm doing in digital citizenship on tilldeathyoutweet.com.
Excellent. Well, we are live on this show Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Please join us live if you can. Tom's off tomorrow working on Know a Little More. Rich is here with me along with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was fantastic.
Nice.
Good show, y'all. If you're watching or listening live and you want to help us name the show, get on over to showbot.tv/DTNS2. Folks have been submitting titles through Discord and Twitch throughout the show, and you can vote on those now. Help us figure out the name of this show. Ah, Stephanie, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Great conversation. Great.
Yeah, yeah. Likewise. Good stuff.
Indeed.
That AI story, I think, is probably the best one I've seen, where it's like a big advance. It's going to be super helpful for a lot of things. And the companies are upfront saying, here's what we did. Here's where, you know, we just couldn't fall. You know, we're going to admit right away, like, we weren't perfect. We didn't get rid of all the bias. So where do we go from here? And that's all you can do right now.
That's all you can ask. Yeah. Yeah. It's just acknowledge the shortcomings, acknowledge where you need help, you know, and move forward. I think that's where Tesla kind of falls short, because they don't, you have to acknowledge the problem exists before you can fix it. So, Microsoft definitely, it's and good NVIDIA. That they put it out there at this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And NVIDIA, yeah.
And you know, the Tesla story struck me as, I mean, not only was the settlement towards this individual over $100 million, but, you know, also add in the astronomical legal fees that the company, you know, had to pay and may continue to pay if they appeal. And to have a very strict, no exceptions policy, you know, I don't care if you're a full-time employee or if you're a contractor and you're in this workplace and you experience something like this, you know, we will have a no tolerance, you know, commitment to you for your safety. And it would be so much less money for the company.
That's the thing. It's like, this could have been avoided altogether, because back in, you know, whenever that first Tesla facility got stood up, your DEI team should have been in place at that same time, creating these policies and these procedures. And we could have avoided all of this, honestly, or a lot of it anyway. And like you said, save them a lot of money.
Yeah. Even if, and I'm not saying this is the case, but even if no one at Tesla cares, they care about money, you know, like want to pay out fewer lawsuits. Well, then have better policies in place.
Well, they have the policies in place and they address the violations of the policies. And so there's a story gap, right? Tesla's saying, no, we jumped in and did all this. This guy's just complaining. And I'm sorry. Yes, that could happen, but it'd be really hard to convince a jury.
Right. To give you $100 million.
Because they're doing 19 times on the punitive because they believed his story.
Right.
Now, granted, sure. Can juries make mistakes? Of course they can. But as Roger, who has been a foreman of a jury, it's really hard to get a jury to agree on anything. And so it's very telling.
I was just dealing with
that happened.
You know, B&E. It's weird. I mean, one of the things that I find, I don't want to say disheartening, but very, I didn't really appreciate it until I sat in, is there's a level of theatrics when you go into a courtroom, because they are trying to persuade the jury one way or the other. And like Tom said, I mean, they went all the way. So either he had an amazing, you know, Matlock-esque lawyer, or his case was very compelling. You know, like, you know, it's, I mean, you can't, in many ways, it's actually really hard to BS your way through something like that, right? To make up stuff, because, you know, if you have any inconsistencies, the defense attorney is going to jump on that. It's like, aha, you said this, but you said this happened.
And the judges are going to direct the jury, like, you can't consider this, you can't consider that, et cetera. Again, none of that's perfect, but it has an effect. Yeah. It's not like a jury just goes in and you know, kind of jumps around and does whatever it wants.
And I'm sure Tesla's attorneys are, you know, the best money can buy. So if they weren't able to, you know, counteract whatever this guy was saying, then clearly where there's smoke, there's fire.
Who do you think had the better attorneys? Who do you think had the higher paid attorneys? You know, I'm just... Yeah,
that's also...
Leave that as an exercise for the audience, but...
Right.
I don't know. It's just, it still kind of boggles my mind, because especially when you're working at a c- company like Tesla, where, you know, some owners have had qualms with some fit and finish issues. You definitely don't want a lot of acrimony in your workforce, because you want them to focus on producing your product.
That cuts both ways, though, right? So the person complaining about the language, like, these guys are saying all this stuff, I don't like it. Like, hey, we don't need acrimony, okay? Stop complaining.
Yeah. You could look at it like that.
Like, I could see that also happening, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I get what you're saying, Roger, which is like, wouldn't it be better if everybody was like comfortable and enjoyed being at work? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. When you're more comfortable, studies have shown you're actually more productive.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to, you know, find inefficiencies and then, you know, work in some way to resolve them. You know, like if you a good chunk of your workforce is somewhat muted and afraid to talk because they're going to lose their job, they're going to be less invested other than punching their, you know, time card once they get in and leaving. You know, they're going to do the bare minimum to stay in and collect a check and, you know, whatever else. But you're not going to get that employee that goes above and beyond to make sure your product with your, you know, that everyone associates with you is, you know, the best it can be. I don't know. Just people are weird.
People are weird. Yeah. It's funny when we were talking about the Twitter story and just kind of like, you know, harassment and things like that. There was something else that just came out with Amazon recently, where they are allowing anyone to send someone a gift with just an email or a phone number. And I was just like, what? And, you know, you can't opt out of it. That was cool because, you know, you just want to surprise somebody. That's nice. But the idea that they're not letting you opt out is just weird to
me. You can opt out of receiving the gift, right? You can say,
but you have to decline. They don't know you declined. But why are you putting the onus on the person, the recipient, to decline the gift?
The one thing I think got missed in a lot of the analysis of this story is that all they're doing is exactly what they do with gift cards right now. With gift cards right now, you can send someone an email. You don't have to know their address or anything that says, I'm giving you a gift card. And so in Amazon, I can see where Amazon would say, like, well, what if we use that same situation and allow someone to send a physical gift? And if somebody doesn't want to receive a physical gift, they could just turn it into a gift card. And then it's no different than the gift card situation. So I think I sort of get what Amazon is doing there, but when you announce
a
product,
worst case scenario,
if when you announce a new product, you bring a lot of new attention, and even if anybody isn't using the gift card system for harassment, now the idea is out there that maybe they could, and they could also use this system for harassment. And so just having a way to opt out and say, yeah, let me have a check mark that says I never want to get that. Just do that.
Yeah. Know?
That's not,
I would feel way more comfortable if I could just say, don't send me anything. And then of course the data grab, because to get the gift, you have to have an Amazon account, and now you need obviously they need your address and, you know, all of this other stuff. So it's just, I don't like anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could get away with not giving an address if you just don't want to receive the gift, but they're going to want to convert it to an Amazon card. I guess you could just not take action. I guess that would be your other option, is because I think after 30 days, it's refunded
like
back to the original purchaser. So you could just ignore it and not have to give Amazon your information. That doesn't solve the problem of if somebody wants to abuse the system and keep sending you stuff. But it does cost them something to send it. At least it's not free to do that.
Right. They have to still buy the gift.
They do have to keep buying something.
You just might not want it. Yeah. Imagine if you were just trying to be, I don't know, a jerk about something, you know, and I was like, Tom made me mad, I'm going to send him a crappy gift I know he doesn't want. It's just a very strange feature.
Well, let's say, and then I just delete the email. I don't do anything. It's going to keep. You're going to have to, and let's say you want to send me a bunch of them, right? You want to keep harassing me.
You have to
keep spending, what, like 90 cents, a dollar probably is the cheapest you're going to be able to find to keep doing this every time. That's going to dissuade some people. It's not going to dissuade everybody, though. That's why I think, you know what? It's really easy to end this conversation. Give me the ability to say, like, no, I would not like to
That's
receive
all. all. Yeah. Like, I don't, yeah, just any time you can't opt out of anything, it just irks me and makes me raise an eyebrow.
I mean, I guess you have to opt out by email address, right? And phone number. Because this is I'm sending a gift to an email address or a phone number. I don't know anything else. I don't have to give any other information. So you'd have to say, if someone wants to send a gift to my email address or my phone number, so you would have to give Amazon that information to have them block it.
Exactly. Sell more data.
I mean, technology has made so many of the social issues that we've always had so much more apparent in our faces because it's, oh, I know I can find out more about you by doing a simple, simple Google search or Liz. I don't know. It's one of those things that we're
going to have to. We're the growing pains, like 50, 100 years from now, people are going to be looking back like, they did what? Back then? Right. They hadn't figured that out yet. Oh my gosh.
You live in a neighborhood that's set on a grid pattern where I can easily coordinate what street and house number you live in. I mean, I'm sure people thought that was crazy when you could have a government employee drop off, pieces of mail and packages that you sent from across the sea.
Instead of the mail, there are a lot of things that the future
promised us that we don't have yet.
We're supposed to have flying cars. What's up with that?
Yeah, jetpacks. Come on.
I don't know if I want a flying car anymore. That sounds.
What's the Sylvester Stallone future movie Revolution? Oh,
Demolition Man.
Demolition Man.
And I always remember that the Sandra Bullock's in it, and she, she makes a joke because he's wondering where the toilet paper is, and she kind of says to her coworker, whatever, she's like, in the 20th century, that's how they did it, and at the time I watched the movie, I was like, wow, I imagine not doing it that way. Maybe we'll get there.
Demolition Man or Judge Dredd?
No, that was Demolition Man.
The seashells thing with the toilet paper, I'm pretty sure it was Demolition Man.
Judge Dredd had Diane Lane. And Judge Dredd was a worse movie.
It was definitely whatever movie Sandra Bullock's.
Yeah, I remember the movie, but I wasn't sure which one it was.
There are people out there who are like, there are other alternatives to toilet paper. I understand that, but
three seashells.
They're
is
not
where
the three seashells though.
And Rob Schneider was in that movie as well as Judge Dredd, but he's like the comic relief. He's like, he doesn't know how to use the three seashells. And that's the joke of the movies because you're trying to figure out how those work.
How do you use the three seashells? Has that ever been uncovered?
That's the joke, right?
That's like the tongue-in-cheek thing for the movie.
Precision is very important.
All us 20th century people don't understand at all.
Also, Taco, all restaurants are Taco Bell in the dystopian future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could see that, though.
That was happening.
Demolition Man. I was like, what's the Revolution Man? I don't know. It's been a while since I saw the movie.
Well,
Revolution
they had electric Rock. Cars, remember? They ran on battery gel.
I should watch that movie again. It's probably one of those things where
it's very 90s when you watch
it. Is, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Like, that weird idea of what the future could look like, but not really.
For a short period of time, it was very predictive. I remember there were several things that started to happen, not the three seashells, but like Taco Bell, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and what was the other one? They all merged, and you started combo restaurants. People were like, see, it's happening.
God, I hope Taco Bell.
Oh, you know what else is interesting? Is like in that movie, all the board members all sat there, but they sat there virtually. Their faces were on those little tablet screens that with each other.
Like a Facebook workspace.
Exactly. And people listened to old time commercial jingles as a pastime on the radio.
I do remember that. Yeah.
That's happening.
I would go back to that. I mean,
I would go back to when Taco Bell's chicken was a little tastier.
If Taco Bell and KFC merged, it means I could get the burritos that I love and the Mountain Dew flavor that I love at the same place.
Wait, you like the burrito? Which burrito do you like?
They have merged.
Other burritos?
Well, not here locally.
Oh, don't have one in Alaska.
In the sweets, whatever the sweets.
Oh, the little like churro flavor. Bite things?
My stomach is hurting. No,
it's a special Mountain Dew. It's only sold at KFC, and it's delicious. But it's the only reason I would go to KFC.
You know, the Mountain
wait,
Dew.
But wait, why is it special?
It's just a different flavor.
It's a different syrup.
KFC special.
It's a different food color.
It's kind of like you can only get Baja Blast.
It's chicken flavored Mountain Dew.
Yeah, like you can only get Baja Blast at Taco Bell. But I don't like Baja Blast. I like the sweet summer or whatever.
Mountain Dew is one of those beverages I associate with the 90s and early 2000s because they made like Code Red. There was such a tie-in with Mountain Dew in video games.
Like
in the early 2000s for some reason. Like if you're a gamer, you would drink Mountain Dew and maybe follow it down with like a Red Bull.
That's because Mountain Dew finally realized how popular they are with Dungeons and Dragons.
I've had a Mountain Dew in my life. But
it's been years though.
I think I've maybe had less than 5 in my whole life.
Oh, wow.
And the last time I might have been 16. I don't even remember what it tastes like.
Oh, I do.
I do. Really sweet. Which is why, I don't drink it anymore.
Yeah.
Stephanie's like, sugar.
I don't even go back there. Mountain Dew over Sprite. So if Sprite's available, I would always just get the Sprite.
You know, Sprite, for some reason, I used to associate like, it's like 7-Up, except more syrup.
Yep.
Like, it just tastes like there's more syrup than Sprite.
That's pretty much what it was.
I was, they were interchangeable to me because I never liked cola, like Coke, Pepsi. I just never liked it. Yeah. So it was, if I could get a soda, you know, if I was allowed to, I'd be like 7-Up or Sprite for sure. Yeah. Root beer, maybe. That's a dark drink also.
My mom
always gave me
7-Up when I had a sore throat. So I kind of started to associate it with having a sore throat.
Product?
So
sick.
I always went for Sprite.
Stephanie, let me ask you, where you're at, do you call it pop, soda, or just say, I want a Coke?
It's soda here. It's funny. I had to break myself because I'm actually originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we are a pop town in Pittsburgh. And so I had to break that habit when I first moved here. So yeah, but it's soda. It's definitely soda.
And is it you?
South Philly, anybody from South Philly would probably tell you it's use.
Okay.
But, I don't know that that's widely used around the Philly area. Delco might be a little different. I don't know if you saw Mayor of Easttown at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That was a fairly accurate representation of the Delaware County experience, if you will. She tried a little too hard on some of the words with the accent, but it was pretty accurate.
All right.
That's good to know.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed that she sounded anything close given the fact that
seriously
she's English. Yeah.
And that Delco accent is very, very specific. Like super specific. So she did a good job with it.
Nice. All right, let's pick a title over at showbot.tv/DTNS2. We'll read out the top 3 vote getters and then Roger will tell you what we picked and why. Dave St. Lou suggested for DTNS, blocking me softly from his tweets. To the tune of Roberta Flack. Beatmaster 80, Tesla showing its true colors. And Ken Warfo 4, Jack, are you listening? Roger, where are we going?
We went with Dave St. Louis blocking me softly from his tweets.
I like that one.
Ties in the song.
It's very musical.
It's a good one.
Funny.
Yeah.
Then for GDI, Neck Guy Green suggested rhymes with lawn. Batfink 2001. Batfink 2001, I hate Mises in pieces. Oh, somehow that makes it even sadder, I think. And Nick with a C.
Oh, wow.
Nick with a C. Happy birthday, Sarah. Yay.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice.
But we went with Ambassador Doe's. I'm all John. Yawn.
Yeah.
John.
All
John in capitals. You
know, maybe next year.
Yeah. All right.
I'm all John.
Very good. Very good. Thanks to everybody who supports us on Patreon and Twitch and just by running out into the street and telling people to subscribe to our show. However you support the show, we appreciate it. We got some folks occasionally giving us a raise, and we'd like to acknowledge those folks. So thank you to Matt Darling, Daniel Martinez, who upped their Patreon. Thank you so much for anonymous. You know who you are. We don't, because you're anonymous. Thank you all for supporting us however you support us. Thanks to the folks over on Twitch as well. We got Norm Physicus said, I can't believe it. I resubscribed in my first available day and found how to do it without my usual getting lost. Insert team name here. 21st month of resubscribing with Prime.
Yay, Norm.
Doesn't cost Norm anything. Capalicious cheered us with some bits. Dave St. Lou wrote, half a year of DTNS, 6 months of subscription. Thank you, Dave St. Lou. Possum 42, as a Canadian who celebrated Thanksgiving this weekend, I am thankful for DTNS. Thank you, Possum 42. And also got some bits from Rabbit 41 and Zoe Brings Bacon. Thanks, everybody, for your support. That's going to do us for us. Stephanie Humphrey, thank you again. This was so fun.
This was amazing.
Come back
thank
soon.
Thank you again so much. I will anytime.
Until tomorrow, everybody, have a good day.
Have a good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.